7:12 a.m., March 18, 2024, Jackson, Mississippi. A nurse steadies a clipboard against a wall and counts the intake line. The clinic opens in 18 minutes. Three women wait for rides. One clutches a plastic bag with prenatal vitamins and pills. Another rubs her belly and watches the clock. The only labor ward within easy reach closed years ago. The next one is a long drive on a highway that floods after hard rain. In a back office, a staffer checks the transfer log and circles two names. A young doctor reviews a drill sheet for hemorrhage and notes which staff are on call. Across town, an ambulance crew waits for the first dispatch. The city wakes. The map of risk is already set. Where you live shapes how fast help can find you. The question is simple and heavy. Who carries the delay when minutes matter? Chapter 1, The Risk Map. 8:04 a.m., March 18, 2024, Jackson, Mississippi. The hallway hums with fluorescent lights. A nurse calls the first name and checks blood pressure. She asks about headaches and swelling. She writes each answer clean for the record. She looks at the address line and knows the road by sight. She knows how long it takes to reach a delivery unit when the weather turns bad. The clinic sits in a neighborhood shaped by old lines on paper. Hospitals once stood closer. Some have closed. Capacity moved. People did not. The nurse moves from room to room with a steady pace. She teaches breathing and rest. She repeats the number for after hours. She writes it twice so it reads well aloud. Risk has language. Maternal mortality is death during pregnancy or within a set window after birth. Severe maternal morbidity is a serious complication that can leave lasting harm. Respectful care means clear talk, consent, and steady attention. Implicit bias is a habit of judgment that can miss pain or danger. These terms are tools. They help us see how risk shows up in daily life. A map on a wall shows zip codes in shades of gray. Darker blocks match longer travel times to a labor ward. Each block also matches income and old housing patterns. The blocks are not accidents. They are the result of past rules and choices. When a labor ward closes, the distance grows. When the distance grows, the window for help shrinks. 9:30 a.m., March 18, 2024. A staffer opens a spreadsheet on an old desktop. She logs transfers from the past month. She notes why each transfer happened. She notes the route used by each ambulance. She marks delays from storms and traffic. She adds a plain note if the patient spoke a language other than English. This log is not a headline. It is quiet proof of where time slips through. Stories travel with the data. A grandmother describes a night when the road was washed out and the detour added 20 minutes. A cousin says the driver missed an exit and had to loop back. A neighbor says she waited in a lobby because the triage nurse could not find an interpreter. None of this is dramatic by itself. Together it forms a pattern. The pattern leans on the same zip codes again and again. To understand the present, the reporter walks the old routes. He stands outside a shuttered county labor ward 30 miles away. He reads the sign that now points mothers toward a hospital in another town. Local workers say they do what they can. They keep extra fuel in the ambulance. They practice the route at night. They tape the on-call list to the wall. They know practice is not the same as capacity. A young doctor flips through a protocol binder. The pages cover hemorrhage, hypertension, and sepsis. The steps are clear. Call for help. Start the checklist. Give the medicine within minutes. The binder knows nothing about flooded roads. The binder assumes the next handoff is close. The binder assumes a second nurse can appear when needed. The binder reduces chaos. It cannot erase distance. No one in the hallway argues with the binder. They also do not confuse a plan with a guarantee. They teach patients what to watch for. They say the signs out loud and ask the patient to repeat them. Headache that will not fade. Swelling that rises fast. Bleeding that grows heavy. Pain that feels wrong. They add the words, "Please call." They hand over a card with the number again. By noon, the clinic has seen 16 patients. A nurse sits for 9 minutes and drinks water. She rubs her eyes and looks at the next file. The address line is another long drive. She writes a small note. The note says, "Remember the ride plan." It is not a diagnosis. It is a map of time. A risk map is not a future. It is a set of pressures. Pressure shows up as a ride that falls through. Pressure shows up as a pharmacy that is out of stock. Pressure shows up as a shift that runs short because a nurse is home with a sick child. In a city like this, the same pressure points stack on the same families. the reporter does not ask for blame. He asks for patterns. Who travels the farthest? Who waits the longest? Who receives the fewest checkups after birth? Who sees a specialist without a fight? The answers match the map. At 2:41 p.m., a woman stands to leave and checks her bus schedule. The nurse asks if she has a plan if labor starts at night. The woman nods. She names a neighbor who can drive. She says the neighbor's car sometimes needs a jump. They trade a look. The nurse writes the hospital's main line on the back of a card and underlines it. The card is thin. The problem is not. The chapter ends where it began, in the hallway with the hum and the clipboards. The risk map is not a mystery. It is visible on the wall and on the road. The open question is sharp. Why do distance and delay fall along the same lines year after year? Who pays when capacity disappears? Chapter 2, Bedside Gaps. 8:17 a.m., April 5, 2023, Bronx, New York. A mother sits up and presses the call button. She says the headache is worse and the lights feel harsh. She says her hands look puffy. A nurse nods and says someone will come. The mother looks at the clock and breathes slow. She thinks of the pamphlet that listed warning signs. She hears a monitor beep in the next bay. This near miss is reconstructed from records and interviews. The times are rounded to protect identity. The facts are verified where records exist. The feelings are the mother's words. 8:22 a.m. A resident checks the chart. The blood pressure reading is high. The note says watch and recheck. The resident steps out to find a supervisor. The hallway is busy. A new admission arrives with strong contractions. The resident turns to help. 8:43 a.m. The mother presses the call button again. She says her vision is foggy. A nurse takes another reading. The numbers are higher. The nurse picks up the phone. She speaks clearly and asks for a doctor at the bedside. She writes the time on the pad and repeats the reading. 8:49 a.m. A doctor arrives. Orders are given. The first medicine is administered. The next steps are started. The mother's head slowly clears. The team watches her closely. The room feels calmer. The mother looks at the clock again. She remembers every minute. Everyone did something right. The nurse escalated. The doctor ordered the right steps. The resident returned. Yet the time between the first warning and the response stretched. The stretch is where harm grows. The stretch is where doubt grows too. Did I explain clearly? Did they hear me? Do I look like someone they believe? A community doula visits later that week. She is not part of the hospital staff. She is trained to support and to translate stress into plans. She asks the mother to tell the story from her point of view. She asks what words she used and what she felt. She writes those words down. She explains what the team likely saw in the data. She explains what the team must do by protocol. She shows how to ask for a rapid review if the signs come back. She offers to attend the next appointment to help with language and trust. Across the city, a resident runs a hemorrhage drill with a small team. He lines up the cart, checks the medicine, and assigns roles. He knows drills save lives. He also knows drills assume staffing is steady. He knows drills assume supplies are ready. He logs the drill time and the team list. He hopes the next real case matches the drill. Contrast matters. An insured patient with a private doctor often has faster access to the same room with the same machines. A patient with limited coverage may wait longer for an interpreter or a bed. Transfers can split care into pieces. A nurse in a crowded unit may carry too many patients. A provider may carry assumptions that soften a warning when it should sound an alarm. None of this is a single villain. It is a series of small decisions under pressure. The series points in the same direction too often. Language access is a hinge. A mother who speaks English as a second language may wave away her own pain to avoid conflict. A clinician pressed for time may use family to translate. That choice saves seconds. It can cost clarity. Hospitals know this. They write policies that favor trained interpreters. The policy does not always survive the rush of the floor. Transfer logs tell their own story. When an ambulance moves a laboring patient between facilities, each minute is shared across teams. The crew reports vital signs. The sending nurse hands off. The receiving team readies a room. If the room is not ready, the patient waits in a hall. The hall is not designed for complex care. The hall needs to be short. Some days the hall stretches. The mother in the Bronx wants only one change. She wants her words to land faster. She wants a phrase that triggers a tight response. She practices a sentence with the doula. She writes it in her phone and says it out loud. She does not want a fight. She wants a shared language at the bedside. The question is not who to punish. The question is how to shrink the stretch between warning and action. The answer lives in staffing, training, and trust. It also lives in a room where a nurse can speak without fear and a mother can repeat herself without shame. Until that room is built every time, the gap remains. The next step is to ask who measures that gap and what happens when a case goes wrong. Chapter 3, Accountability and Prevention. 10:03 a.m., June 7, 2024, State Review Meeting. A conference room holds a dozen people. A chair opens the file on a recent death. The names are redacted. The facts are plain. What happened? Where? When? Which steps were late? Which steps were missed? What pressures were in play? Staffing. Transport. Communication. Equipment. Postpartum follow-up. The room is quiet. No one argues with the clock. The chair asks which parts of the case are preventable. The team answers in simple terms. Yes. No. Maybe. The word preventable is heavy. The word guides the next actions. The word also hurts. Families carry it without a choice. Review bodies track cases to learn. They look for patterns by zip code and facility. They look for delays at night and on weekends. They look for language barriers. They look for gaps in follow-up after discharge. They recommend fixes that start with basics. Staff training on warning signs. Stocked carts. Clear power to escalate. Clean handoffs. Real interpreter access. Better postnatal contact within a set number of days. These are not glamorous. They work when supported. Transparency matters. A hospital that shares aggregate results shows respect. Families learn where progress is real. Clinicians see their effort reflected in the numbers. Leaders have fewer places to hide weak spots. Public reports must protect privacy. Public reports must also be clear enough to guide action. When reports hide behind jargon, trust thins. Accountability is not only a list of penalties. Accountability is also a plan that keeps people from failing alone. A nurse cannot fix a short-staffed weekend by willpower. An ambulance crew cannot make a flooded road rise. A resident cannot manufacture an interpreter. Leaders must open valves that staff cannot touch. Money, hiring, transport agreements, backup sites, data systems that talk to each other. If these do not move, frontline work is heroism without air. Families also ask what they can do inside a system that feels closed. The guidance must stay non-clinical and respectful. Bring a written list of concerns. Learn one sentence that signals danger in clear terms. Ask who has the power to call a rapid review. Ask when the next check will happen after discharge. Ask what number to call if signs return at night. If the answer is vague, ask the staffer to write a number on paper. Take a photo of it. Repeat the number out loud. If an interpreter is needed, ask for one who is trained. If none is available, ask when one will arrive and what can be done in the meantime that is safe. Communities can document patterns without shaming single workers. Track wait times at clinics. Track ride plans and backup drivers. Track how many patients receive a call within the first week after birth. Track which questions families felt safe asking and which they held back. Share those notes with a local review council or a trusted care partner. Patterns turn private worry into public facts. Public facts can move budgets. At 11:12 a.m., the review meeting returns to the case file. The chair reads the timeline aloud. The team votes on recommendations. The list will go to hospitals and agencies. Some items will be adopted fast. Some will stall. The chair asks for a follow-up check in 6 months. A staffer writes the date in a planner. Progress needs a clock of its own. In a neighborhood forum that evening, midwives, nurses, and advocates sit in a circle. A mother holds her baby and tells a story of swift care that made all the difference. A father speaks about a long night that felt like a maze. A young nurse says she stayed after a shift to help a family get a ride. The room is full of quiet power. No one pretends the map is fair yet. No one denies that steady work can shift lines. The cost of inaction is not abstract. It shows up in empty cribs and quiet houses. It shows up in birthdays that are not marked. It shows up in staff who leave after too many hard nights. The cost of action is real too. It asks for money, staff, and attention. It asks for leaders to hear uncomfortable patterns and to respond in public. The series ends where the work must begin, with a promise to count what matters and to share what is found. with a promise to shrink the stretch between warning and help, with a promise to bring distance down. The final question is simple and demanding. Who will own the timeline from the first sign to the safe return home?